I'm really struck on Good Friday with the stark reality of Jesus, the Son of God, going to the cross and just how awful it would have been. We have the Stations of the Cross, which we did earlier here today, and that Jesus, we read the whole trial. He's just being given the runaround, being sent from here to there, and he knows what's coming, and never once is he unflinching, is he unwavering, that there's this determined spirit. We had heard chapters before in John's gospel that Jesus resolutely set his face on Jerusalem. He resolutely set his face on Jerusalem, knowing full well what was coming and still pursuing it. And it's now that he's getting to enter into it fully, completely, that he falls the first time, and you think, wow, that is awful, and he gets back up. He falls a second time, and you're thinking, why do you keep going? And he gets back up. And he falls a third time, and you think, Lord, please, just stay there. Like, just let them kill you here. And out of this abundance, overflowing love, with all the power left in his body, he stands up and continues moving. It's so brutal. And all of this, I can't help but think of like where I would be. Like, Jesus never once asks, you know, can you go get me Andy's frozen custard? It would make this a little bit easier. Can, like, a six-pack of beer would go a long way. Can you just hand me my iPad so I can numb out for a little bit? Like, this is what happens to us in the midst of our sufferings. We try to escape, and we try to numb the hard things. We find all the little ways to secure my own peace, my lone little pocket of happiness, just so that I can be okay. And I'm mesmerized, truly, by Jesus heroically taking on his cross and plowing ahead, one step in front of the other, one step in front of the other. That Jesus sets an incredible model for us. And if he can do it, the pattern of the Christian life is to lay down ourselves as Jesus did. The trouble that I find preaching all the time is that the good news doesn't make sense in a comfortable 21st century world. We have really cozy lives. It's nice. You're going to go home. It's muggy outside. You have air conditioning. It's going to make it all better. You'll take a nice warm shower tomorrow because it's so cold in your house. You need to warm yourself up with a hot shower. It's like we have all these comforts available to us. Like, why do we need God? Why does anybody need God? What does good news mean when my life is pretty much good? The good news, ultimately, is no news if we don't know the bad news. And the bad news is that being separated from God is the worst thing in the world. That if he is the author of all things that are good, that being close to him is what we are made for. That's communion. Communion, union with God. And that Jesus makes that possible on the cross. That we have been separated from the Lord by our own sins. Our own sins slowly deprive us of life. They kill us. And yet Jesus comes to bridge the gap by a pure offering of love. Could God have saved us in another way? He could have. But why was the cross the most fitting way? Lest we would lose sight of love. That Jesus is willing to suffer and endure so much so that we, in response, all we can do is bow down and worship him. But we have to be hit with the stark reality, the worst despair that you felt, the worst discouragement, the isolation, the loneliness that you felt, that people aren't understanding you, that you don't feel like you've gotten any wins recently, like nobody's on your team, nobody's on your side. All of that leads to a lonely place we call hell, which ultimately is what we deserve apart from Jesus Christ. That's the bad news. And so we can say the gospel of the Lord, the good news of the Lord, only because of what he has done on the cross, the price that he's paid. And if the worst thing we can experience here on this earth is a separation from Jesus, I think of two characters at the end of today's gospel. Joseph of Arimathea, who only appears here, and Nicodemus. And it wrecks me. It wrecks me that in John chapter 3, Jesus has this lengthy conversation with Jesus. Nicodemus has this lengthy conversation. And after that, out of fear, he refuses to follow him. Out of fear and reluctance of not knowing where this could go, what price I might have to pay for being a follower of Jesus, I refuse to follow after this man. But thankfully, at the cross, we see Nicodemus offer this act of mercy to help lower Jesus' body from the cross and to anoint him with 100 pounds of aloe and oils. Just one last act of mercy to show his dedication to the Lord. And we know Saint Nicodemus became a saint, became a Christian. But like, he didn't get to spend time with the Lord. How long do we have to wait to make it worth it? How long do we have to make it wait to really spend time with the Lord, to be close to him, to sacrifice for him, to pay the price? That there's always a cost to following the Lord in my life, but do we believe that he's worth it? Nicodemus, of course, and then Joseph of Arimathea, who was secretly a disciple of Jesus for fear of the Jews. That fear paralyzes us. It stops us from making the next step, whatever the next step is. The next step might be, I just need to sit in silence for 15 minutes a day. The next step might be, I need to forgive someone, for goodness sakes. This grudge, this resentment is blocking my capacity to love. The next step might be inviting your family back to church, inviting your friends back to church, being bold, and maybe being persecuted for it. We can't be stopped dead in our tracks because of the fear that paralyzes our hearts. Jesus urges us on. And this is the last thing. Our letter to the Hebrews, I love this line so much. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has similarly been tested in every way, yet without sin. We have a high priest who knows our weaknesses. And the author writes, so let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and to find grace for timely help. Let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and to find grace for timely help. I remember being in Italy and I was forced to confess my sins to this priest in Italian, which was awful. I was all over the place. Actually, I was in Spain and I had to confess in Italian because he didn't understand English. And I just remember his advice to me during it was confiducia, confiducia, confiducia. And I had to look it up afterwards, of course. Confiducia. And look it up, it's confidence. Confidence. Do we have the confidence to approach the throne of grace? Do we have the confidence to approach Jesus who loves us, who from the cross knew you before you were knit in your mother's womb, that from the cross Jesus was thinking about you, that from the cross Jesus knew you as you are here in this church today. He knows your heart then, he knows your heart now. Let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy. Mercy is where God's love meets my need, where God's love comes so close that it meets me right in my need, to confidently receive mercy and to find grace for timely help. In just a short period, we're going to bring out the cross, the weapon of our salvation. We're going to bring out the cross, the throne that Jesus mounts so that we might receive his mercy. Let us confidently approach this throne of grace to adore it and to receive mercy and to find grace for timely help.